Okay, so here we are again with one of these little podcasts. Let me, first of all, apologize for the variable quality of the recording on the guitar. I'm not quite sure if that's the result of the format that I'm using to do this, or the knowledge and dexterity of the end user, which, if I had to venture a guess, I'd say it's probably a little of both, but I'm going to claim the lion's share of responsibility on this one, since it is a well-known fact that my electronic skills are pretty bereft, and I'm being kind to myself when I say that. Electronic and digital gadgetry are definitely not my forte. This is probably why I have majority of the amps that I use are old school tubes, and most of the effects pedals I use are analog. Forget the fact that they just sound better, in my personal opinion. I know that's a debated topic amongst musicians, but excuse me, I think you'll find most of your snobatorium types will say the tubes sound better for the most part, and I think that's probably true, but each of you has to decide what sounds best for you and to take that route, which is kind of my meandering way of getting into the topic tonight, which, by the way, if you didn't recognize that piece I was playing, it's probably because you haven't heard it before, because it's a piece written by a buddy of mine who's really, I love his stuff a lot, and it's a piece entitled You Never Will Change Me. And it talks about holding true to one's values in spite of society's misanthropic views of that person's value system. Which, of course, is if I were in the South, which of course I am, and were I from the South, which of course I am, I'd say that in a more colloquial manner of, that boy thinks he's got some shit going on. He's a hot one, ain't he? He thinks he's something, right? And, you know, I can make fun of the South because I'm from the South. And, you know, obviously I live here. So, you know, you Yankees can't be saying shit about the South. Anyway, what this really is about, you know, is all of us have things that make us stand out in one way or another. You know, whether it's because we're, you know, a lot skinnier for our, you know, size than we quote unquote should be according to stats, or we're a lot fatter than we're supposed to be, you know, or particularly if you're a kid, as you know, if you wear glasses, or if you, you know, dress in a quote unquote nerdy way, you know, or God forbid, if you have some chronic illness, physical illness or disability that makes you stand out, you know, or if you belong to a racial or ethnic group that is in the minority in your arena, then obviously you're going to stand out. And so people stand out for a variety of reasons, some of which they choose to stand out for, such as belief systems, and then choose to open their mouth about them, as I often do, which frequently gets me into all kinds of hot water. Or through no fault of their own, they got, you know, they've got born with some chronic illness, or, you know, visual impairment or hearing impairment. You know, they're an albino, so-called albino, and, you know, they don't have any pigment in their eyes, so they're wearing glasses that look like the size of Coke bottles because that's what they have to do to get their eyes to see. This is obviously not their quote-unquote fault. They have to do something in order to be able to have vision, you know, as a quote-unquote normal person would do. And as many of you know who know me, I myself wear glasses and have for a very, very long time since I was a kid, which is kind of weird because very few folks in my family. In fact, I can not remember anybody, actually, in my immediate family who ever had a problem with vision until they got really old. And I've had a problem since I was a kid. I've been incredibly myopic. So I've had to wear glasses to see far away for a long, long time. And that has not changed any. And, of course, as I get older, as most people do, I'm suffering from presbyopia, which is a kind of fancy way of saying that your eyes don't readjust for short throw as well as they do for long throw. So if you're looking at something short and you look at it long, your eyesight kind of goes, what the hell's going on? We ain't used to this crap. What the hell? You know, anyway, and so some of us, you know, have to get glasses to read, or you get, you know, those graduated lenses, which I tried to do one time, just drove me absolute ape bananas, more so than normal. So my solution was to get, fortunately, I don't need glasses to read, but I do need them for short throws versus long throws. So I recently obtained one pair for my arm's length, what I call my short throw vision, and with a pair that I wear normally to drive. Otherwise, I'd really be killing people and driving more recklessly than I and impatiently than I normally do. Oops, did I say that? But be that as may, obviously I've been a guy that's had glasses since I was a kid, and I caught a lot of crap for that. I've also been a guy who has had chronic illness through no fault of my own and been in and out of hospital most of my childhood, in fact, almost all of my childhood and all of my adolescence, or been on medication or whatever. And it really makes you stand out amongst your peers in kind of an way that is unenviable most among teenagers. And that was clearly the case for me. And in my case, and I think I've said this on prior podcasts, I also had a condition where because of all the medication I was on as a kid, my metabolism pretty much shut down. And around 9 or 10, I started putting on weight. And so then I became a portly individual, which is a nice way of saying I was fat. And, you know, despite the fact I only ate one meal a day and, you know, went on countless diets and all kind of crazy crap and tried to do exercising when I wasn't, you know, sick and puking up blood and whatever, you know, my weight stayed extremely overweight. So I was, you know, like 5'11", 5'10 and a half and weighed 230. You know, through my childhood and adolescence, it was really an unenviable scenario. And I'm sure, as most of you know, if you have any sort of, you know, physical disabilities or characteristics that make you stand out in a very unenviable way, kids can be pretty cruel about that kind of thing. So some of those things you don't really have a lot of control over. I later in my life ended up healing myself through holistic methods, since I've been written off by the medical profession. I think I've talked about that before, which kind of got me on the journey of health and wellness and doing, you know, more holistic remedies and eating much more healthy, more, you know, quote-unquote whole foods, organic stuff, and not doing sugar, even though sugar is technically an organic material. I don't do, you know, refined sugar and that sort of stuff. So it's part of the reason I've become a finicky snob about what I put into my mouth, and why I learned how to cook and taught myself how to cook well so that I could eat well, enjoy my food, but at the same time eat healthy. And thankfully, since my mid to late 20s, I have healed myself and lost the weight, and I'm really, really thankful for that. But I still wear glasses, and, you know, I don't catch as much guff for that, obviously, as an adult, but I do have long hair. Now, that's a choice. That's not something that was foisted upon me. And I choose to have my hair long, irrespective of the negative feedback I sometimes get from it, particularly living in the South. And as a graduate student, I definitely caught a lot of crap for that. You know, and so there's folks out there who are, you know, transgendered, or, you know, in the process of, you know, being cross-gendered into something else than they were born with. There's folks in there who are obviously ethnic or racial or religious minorities, or you're an atheist living in the South, or, you know, whatever. And, you know, this becomes now the issue of, you know, what do you do when you have belief systems, or you have ideas, or religious practices? Now, obviously, you can choose not to publicize your religious practices, but, you know, let's say your religious practices require you to wear certain garb or not to wear certain vestments, and you go out in society, it's going to be pretty obvious what you're doing. And so now your choice is, you know, do I sell out my religious and spiritual beliefs, or do I conform so people won't make fun of me and, you know, risk condemnation of my own people and, or, you know, the wrath of God or goddess or whatever your deal is. And I'm not making fun of any of that. I'm just saying that, you know, not everybody has the same spiritual views that, you know, mainstream society has. So what do you do with that? You know, what do you do? And as a kid, I think that's a lot harder particularly if you're born with some sort of physical disability or, as most of you may or may not know, and I think I've mentioned this on a prior podcast, Tony Iommi, the longtime lead guitar player for Black Sabbath, in addition to being left-handed, kind of like Paul McCartney, except Paul McCartney's a bass player, obviously. In case you didn't know that, you should be bitch-smacked, but at any rate. kind of like Jimi Hendrix, and if you don't know that, you should be double bitch-smacked. Anyway, Tony Iommi's a left-handed guitar player, and at a young age, as a teenager, he got the ends of his fingers cut off, and you know he was in a quandary about what to do, and he eventually adapted by putting metal nubs on his ends of his fingers, his fretting hand, which allowed him to still play the notes, and eventually he created a completely new style of music, which we now know as heavy metal. And as most of you know, Black Sabbath are considered to be the godfathers of heavy metal, and I would not disagree with that in any way, shape, or form. Be that as it may, that sort of puts you out in the middle of stuff. You know, you're playing a music during the time when they were playing it that was very new and radical, and I'm sure they caught a lot of crap for that. So, you know, people have a lot of things that make them unique, and I think some folks handle that better than others, and I can tell you that I certainly don't always handle it well. I've not traditionally, in my youth, handled it really well. I isolated a lot, and I was very pissed off and very depressed as a kid, although I was a lot more aware of my anger than I was my depression. And as I think I've said before in a podcast, for me, the anger was kind of turning the depression outward so I wouldn't focus on how bad I hated myself and how badly I felt about myself and my physique and all this kind of good crap. At any rate, there are certainly folks out there who are unique individuals, whether they're of cross-gendered or transgendered or, you know, they have transvestite leanings that they do in private, you know, or they are of a spiritual religious orientation that is not well accepted in their area, or they're of an ethnic or racial group that makes them stand out, or they simply have belief systems that run contrary to the mainstream in their immediate environment. So now what do you do? You know, and most people, once they become the target of this kind of thing, you know, you're sort of easy prey. And I think most of us, even throughout the world, on smaller issues, you know, we deal with this. You know, if you have, for instance, if one of your edicts, one of your moral caveats to yourself is, you know, you don't take things that are not yours, you don't steal. You know, what if you do when you walk up and you know, you see a $20 bill on the floor in the grocery store? You know, and I think I've probably told the story before, but it bears repeating because despite my father's many bad habits and personality issues, one thing he did do that I thought was incredibly laudatory was that he was, despite his cluster B personality disorders, was honest to a fault. And I remember as a kid riding in the car with him, and he was pulling out of one of his stores that he owned, and where there was somebody had dropped a deposit bag, you know, those kind of leathery-looking bags that people take large amounts of deposits to the bank. And this particular one had almost nothing but cash in it. There was no checks or whatever. It was predominantly cash. And my dad saw it on the driveway as we were pulling out of his store, and he stopped and picked it up and opened the bag to see what was in it, and there was just wads and wads of cash, and I don't know how many thousands of dollars, but it was a bunch of $100 bills rolled up. It was a boatload of money, and it would have been nothing for him to have taken that money and said, oh, well, sucks to be you, whoever dropped it, and stuck it in the car and drove off, and nobody would have been the wiser. You know, and it always has stuck in my head that, you know, he pulled back into the front of the store, you know, we were sort of pulling out, and he stopped the car and got out and got it, and then pulled the car fully back into the driveway, to our driving area, went inside and gave it to one of the cashiers, and, you know, told the cashier to, you know, if the person coming in could identify it, yada, yada, to give it to them. And that always made a huge impression on me. And, you know, I've seen my father do that kind of thing on many, 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 many occasions, giving cashiers at grocery stores money back when they gave him too much change and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was just really amazing. And so my father, you know, that was one thing he did do, is he was honest in that regard to a fault. You know, and certainly all of us have these temptations to go against what we know is true, to sell out. And a lot of times when you're getting, you know, a lot of grief from your colleagues, your peer group, as to conform, as Rush would say in Subdivisions, conform or be cast out, you know, what are you going to do? You know, do you hold true to what you believe? You know, do you make a big deal about it, or do you hide it but still do it in private and whatever? You know, I mean, during one of the many anti-Semitic periods and, you know, in the history of the world, I know there was a period in Spain in the late 1400s, about the same time I think Columbus made a trip over here to America, when the Spanish decided they were going to no longer tolerate these Jewish traditions and basically said the Jews had X number of weeks to get out of Spain, convert or die. And a lot of the Jews who didn't die or leave so-called converted, but they practiced their Judaism in private. So one way they got around this dilemma was to outwardly pretend to be Catholic, you know, practice Catholicism or be Catholic, or, you know, while quietly in their home still practicing a lot of Judaic tradition. So everybody has a different workaround, so to speak, for these kinds of things. And, you know, everybody's workaround has to work for them. And sometimes you're really tempted to just say, what the heck? You know, we're just going to sell out, or we're going to pretend we like the person who's in the White House when the rest of my fans, you know, hate him. I mean, when I hate him and the rest of the people like him, or the rest of my, you know, people around me hate him and I like him, or, you know, what do you do? And I run into this a lot with a lot of my belief systems, because my belief systems are often grounded and pretty immutable. Like my dad, I have a couple of kind of hard and fast, never do's, and a couple of hard and fast always do's. And that's really hard sometimes, particularly the one about telling the truth about what you really believe. I don't believe in telling little white lies. I'll sometimes try to avert the issue and point out the good stuff about the particular issue. But, you know, if somebody says, you know, what do you really think? You know, generally I'll say, okay, well, I mean, you know, do you really want to know my full opinion? You know, and then you have to know how to deliver it, right? Because even if you can say the truth, you know, you can say the truth in a way that is a little less harsh. And again, I'm not talking about political correctness, because to me, political correctness is lying. That's you know, not saying what you really feel, you know. I don't have a problem. I don't do that. I don't have a problem with that because I don't do it. I consider that to be a lie. That's one of my major hard limits, so to speak. But I will often ask the person, particularly if they don't know me, what they really think, in terms of do they want to know what I really think, or do they want me to kind of, you know, And sometimes I know the person well enough to know what that person wants. And sometimes the person, if they know me well enough, to say, look, just, you know, let me have it. Tell me what you really think of this thing. And if somebody asks for direct feedback, again, I have a responsibility, not in my own mind. Again, this is one of my personal things. You know, to be polite, I don't have to say, you know, that dress looks like dog shit on you. But I can say, you know, I personally don't like that dress on you at all. I think it makes you look fat, or I think it doesn't bring out your best qualities, or it makes you look, you know, weird or dirty, or it's not your color. I personally hate it. But you know what? If you like it, you ought to wear it, and you ought to not really give two flips about what I think. And so I'll try to say it in a way that conveys my disdain about something if I really don't like it. But also say, but you know what, this is a personal thing, and you need to do what you need to do and what's right for you. And I think that's kind of the bottom line for me. You know, all of us have to decide what are our hard and fast rules. But, you know, we're back to kind of what I talked about on my last podcast, which is knowing yourself. Because obviously, if you don't know who you are and what you stand for, irrespective of your race or creed or religious views or sexuality or whatever, it kind of becomes hard to defend it. Even in your own head, you know, but providing, let's assume that you've done some, you know, introspective inquisition inside your head and tried to, you know, parcel out what's important and what's not important and made a list of stuff, which I really recommend everybody on the frickin' planet do. I think this William James version of introspection, he's one of the first guys to suggest this kind of process. Who is, in my mind, just one of the brightest guys in modern times to have lived. For those of you who don't know who William James is, you need to investigate him. Really bright man. He's just phenomenal. I really respect him because, you know, in addition to being scientific and, you know, helping to start the profession of psychology and what we do and, you know, being an advocate for scientific inquiry, you know, he also was an advocate of parapsychology. For those of you who don't know that, shame on your ass, all right, because he was a huge parapsychic believer in the sense that we shouldn't just blow stuff off because it seems like poppycock. We, you know, just because we don't have the tools to measure it now doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't exist. We need to leave our minds open for the possibility, not let's just believe everything that comes our way, obviously. But, you know, he is the first guy to suggest that a science that doesn't accept that as a possibility is not a real science. And I really, 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 really respect him for that. Most of you may or may not know that that's a big passion of mine as well. So I have, my hat is definitely off to that man, as well as a lot of folks in our history who are just brilliant people. You guys have heard me say this before. There's so many smart people, particularly the ancient folks, that you just kind of scratch your head, at least I do, and go, how the hell did these guys and gals get so daggum smart? Because they sure as hell didn't have Google, and they didn't, you know, they didn't have internet, didn't have computers, they didn't even have libraries, for God's sake. They're the people that created the information that we have in our libraries. It's just like, oh my word, you know, these guys and gals are just the bomb. But anyway, so I think that you have to decide what it is you believe, you know. And so if somebody asked me about my parapsychological beliefs, you know, and I think they really want to know, I'll discuss them with them. I don't go out there and make it a big deal. I don't rub it in people's face. I don't rub people's face that I play hard rock and heavy metal. You know, and I also play blues and blues rock and you know, semi-classical and jazz rock fusion and acoustic and, you know, I play a lot of different stuff. I don't go rubbing any of that stuff into people's face because, A, it's really not my concern whether they like me or not like me. And, I'm frankly, and I mean no disrespect to anybody, so I don't want any of you listeners to hear this, I really don't give two flying shits whether people like me or not. You know, if particularly if they're going, if I'm going to have to put on some kind of false front, some persona for them to approve of me, they don't like me for what I am. You know, that's fine. They have the right to do that. They should do that if they really don't like me and move on. But I'm probably not going to change to suit you, which is why I like Mark's song, You Never Will Change Me, because, you know, it's about, you can do, the song basically says you can do anything you want. You can beat the hell out of me. You can kill me, you can put me in jail, you can bribe me with all kinds of money, you can make me king of the world or whatever, but you're not going to change what I feel because my inspiration of who I am and what I am comes from a much higher source than this worldly stuff can give me, and I would completely agree with that. You know, and again, I don't go out putting my spiritual beliefs or whatever, I don't go out putting my sexual beliefs or anything else out in public. You know, it's just not anybody's business. But if somebody asks me, then I have to make this decision in my head, you know, I have to sort of guess. And sometimes if I can't guess, I just ask them, well, you know, why is it you want to know? I don't mind talking about it, but what is it, you know, why does this interest you? What is it about my stuff that interests you? You know, why is it important to you? And if I deem that it's a rational question in my own mind, I realize that's a subjective decision. You know, I'll answer their question. You know, if I think they're doing it just to be a jerk or whatever, I probably won't. Or if I really don't give a flip, or if I'm trying to encourage them to be irritated, I'll probably tell them anyway because I know they're not going to like it, you know. But that's a decision every one of you has to make. You have to know who the heck you are. You have to know what you're willing to do to fit in, you know, because not fitting in means you're alone. You're an isolated person. Now, I'm not suggesting that's a bad thing because you can be a loner and not be alone. Those are two completely different phenomena. Right, you can be alone and not lonely, right? Because I'm alone most of the time. In fact, one thing I would argue, very much like the existential theorists and psychotherapists would argue, is that we are all alone all of the time. We're born alone, we live alone, and we die alone. The reality is, and what they mean by that, for those of you who are not familiar with that, is that nobody can do the work for you. You have to take the test yourself. You can get support from your mom, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your aunt, your sister, your cousin, whatever, but you're the person that has to walk in there and take the test and suck it up and do the best you can do. It's all up to you. You're alone in this situation. We are all alone all the time. We delude ourselves by getting into relationships and think somehow we're not alone, that somebody's going to, you know, make it easier for us. And I'm not, you know, denigrating social support. I think social support's a great thing if it's coming from true people that know you and care about you. I think that's an awesome thing. But with all the social support on the planet, you still got to go through it yourself. you know, and most of you know, I had a surgery about a month ago, month and a half ago, and I had a lot of social support from the, you know, one or two or three friends I have. That's not much of a joke, because that's about all I do have. And I don't say that, oh, poor baby. You know, my personal belief is most of us have, if we can really put our fingers on two, three, or maybe three really, 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 really good friends, and I'm going to define that in a minute, you are a lucky man, or you are a lucky woman, or you are a lucky whatever, however you define yourself. Because to me, a friend is somebody who knows you and cares about you anyway, somebody who values you as a person, regardless of whether you agree with them or not, regardless if you do what they think you should be doing or not, regardless of whether you look good or not, it doesn't matter. They accept you as a being for whatever reason or reasons. And because of that, they're going to be honest with you and tell you the way it is. They're not going to lie to you, right? That's not a friend. That's an acquaintance. Right. Anybody on the street can lie to you. It takes a true person who cares about you as an individual to tell you the truth. Right. Most of us go to people to get social support. We go to people who are going to say what we want them to say. Friends don't do that. Friends tell it exactly the way that they see it. Period. Because they care about us enough to tell us the truth in the way that they see it. And they can only tell us their own truth, because the truth is subjective in everybody's eyes, pretty much. You know, unless you have, you know, pencil and paper and photographic evidence, you know, a lot of stuff is subjective in our world. But at any rate, you know, I had to go through the surgery, and I had a couple of friends I had were very, very supportive. And, you know, my best buddy took me to the outpatient clinic and sat and waited for my ass to wake up and go through the surgery, which I thought was really cool. You know, and I knew that I had that person's support, and I had a couple other people who were very supportive. Call us if you need us. Can we bring you food? Can we do anything? You know, and I thought that was really awesome. But when push came to shove, I was the son of a biscuit eater that had to be laying on the table taking the needle, right, and getting cut on, right? And I don't like needles, okay? Just FYI, for those of you who don't know, right, I am a needle phobic. I don't do well with needles. I have to go through all these machinations in my head. Now, you know, I managed to get through it, but it's not a fun operation, no pun intended. Okay, maybe a small pun. You got me. like you thought you were going to get away with that, okay? I do these on the podcast all the time, please. I had to go through it myself. It was nice knowing those people cared about me and they were there if I needed them. But I'm the guy that had to man up and lay on the table and do my thing, you know? And I would argue that that's everybody. So if you're a persecuted, you know, group of people or person, you got to put up with it, even though you might have your best friend or your buddy or whatever, and certainly that helps. You got to go through it. Nobody can do life for you. So what you have to decide, each and every one of you, is what do you really stand for? Who are you? And again, that requires, we're going back to the self-reflection. So if you haven't heard the Self-Reflection Know Yourself podcast, which is the last one I did, go back and listen to it, because that'll make this a lot clearer, I think. But, you know, sometimes people choose to be unique. They, you know, they're a person who's born a male, and they decide that they're in the wrong body, that they're really a female locked in a male's body. I'm not trying to be funny, guys and gals out there. I'm really, really not. You know, and then they don't know what to do about it, and, you know, and they have to decide, is it worth, do they have the money? Is it worth the money and the time and the pain and the suffering to go through it? You know, do you share it with somebody? Do you move to, if you get it done, do you move to a new area of town or a new country or a new state or whatever? You know, I mean, that's just really important. One thing I will tell you is that regardless of what your differences are, whether they're because you're fat or skinny or black or white or green or red or Jewish or Greek or, you know, American, and trust me, if you're in some countries, being American is not a good thing, okay? I found myself apologizing for it a lot when I was in certain European countries about 8 or 9 years ago on my trip, because I felt so embarrassed because of the people we had in Washington. Of course, I felt embarrassed about the people we had in Washington for the last 30 years, so that wasn't anything new. But some people make more of an ass of themselves to other countries than others, and I felt a need to go, wait a minute, I didn't vote for that son of a bitch. you know, you just have to be careful. And whatever your thing is, you know, always remember that if you're the odd man or woman or whatever out, it is not up to other people to adjust to you, right? It's up to you to figure out how you're going to adjust as much as you feel like you can without selling yourself short to society, if you want to be a part of it, if you want to make money in it, if you want to get, you know, any kind of influence in it, if you want to be part of the group, you know, the majority rules here. So, you know, most of you know my sleep disorder that I have that I inherited. Another thing that makes me a weirdo, like I didn't have enough shit already, right? And for those of you who don't know, I have inherited a sleep disorder from my mom's side of the family that's called circadian rhythm sleep cycle disordered, delayed phase shift type, which is a fancy way of saying I go to bed about 5 or 6 in the morning, get up about 1:30 every day, and start my day essentially functioning about 2:30 or 3 o'clock. So I don't see patients before 3. I don't teach classes before 2 or 3. I'm not competent before then. I don't work before 2 or 3 in the afternoon as a general rule. And I go until however late I have to go, and I work Saturdays and Sundays, and I make house calls and yada yada, and you know. But I have to accommodate. I can't expect the world to accommodate to my sleep cycle. The world has been set up for whatever reason on pretty much, you know, a morning, afternoon kind of cycle. So most folks operating on an 8-to-4 or a 9-to-5 schedule. And if a store, and I've said this to folks before many, many, many times, you know, if a store closes at 4 o'clock or 4:30, and there's a bagel shop near my house, and I'm a bagel freak. So for those of you who don't know, I love real bagels. And this person obviously used to live in New York and had a bagel shop in New York. And I didn't ask if the owner was Jewish or not, but it wouldn't surprise me because the bagels are like the bomb, like the ones I had at the Jewish Bagels when I was visiting New York. I just love those things. Anyway, this bagel shop is a morning, early afternoon bagel shop. So they open at like 6 in the morning. They obviously do a big lunch business and a big breakfast business and people on the way to work. And they close at 3. You know, now for me, I have to make daggum sure that I get my lazy vampire butt out of my coffin in time to get dressed and look like a half, you know, way decent human being and show up at this bagel shop before 3 o'clock if I want bagels, right? It's not personal. They didn't close at 3 o'clock just to piss me off. They didn't close at 3 o'clock because they wanted to be mean or go, ha, 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 he doesn't get bagels, right? You know, my sleep disorder is my problem. It's not the bagel owner's problem. It's not society's problem. It's my goddamn problem. Right? And as my problem, the responsibility is on me to adapt. It is not on society, right? So if you've got a quirky dilly, whether, you know, you're a transgendered person or whether you're, you know, a racially minimized person or a fat, skinny, whatever, you know, blindsided person, person with, you know, bad vision as I have or my sleep disorder, whatever your deal is, and we all have something going on, right? So whatever your deal is, you know, if somebody's got something you want, it's your job to adjust to them. It is not their job to kowtow to your ass, or my ass, or anybody else's ass, for that matter. Ba-doom, okay? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Yeah, okay, I know. Yeah, my jokes still suck, I know. Anyway, my point being, you have to ask yourself how much you want to engage yourself in society. What do you want out of the world? What do you want out of other people in the world? What are your value systems? What are the things that you stand for? What are your quirks? What are your limitations? And find creative ways to get around them. Find creative ways to deal with them. Now, you know, the best creative way I can do with my sleep disorder is just suck it up and just do the best I can with it. I don't want to take drugs for the sleep disorder because I'm not convinced most of those drugs aren't. I mean, we all know that the traditional sedative hypnotics, the sleeping pills, are all like addicting as heck. And they say all these other, you know, things like, you know, these like Lunestra with the butterflies and all this kind of crap and Ambien and stuff. Oh, yeah, they're safe. Yeah, well, you know what? They said that shit about Prozac several years ago. And now they're suggesting that you don't be on Prozac more than a couple of years, that it might have, you know, deleterious effects down the road. So no offense to the drug companies. You know, God bless them. They're trying to help us, I guess, but count me out. And since addictions run on both sides of my family, that's the last goddamn thing I need is a drug addiction problem or a brain wiring problem more than I've already got. Okay, this is like a bad idea. So I just deal with it the best I can. I arrange, you know, my day the most I can. And if I have to be someplace like this bagel shop, you know, on time, I make damn sure that my alarm sets at a time where I have to get up. And if I'm going to be sleepy, I have to allow extra time to drive because I'm not really awake. I want to be sure that I'm going to be a safe driver and not harm any of the drivers on the road as best as I can. I have responsibilities to other folks. Well, so does the rest of you folks out there. You have a responsibility to your fellow man and woman and whatever out there to do your thing the best you can, but you can't get in their way of doing their thing either. Right. And that to me is sort of the cutting edge of responsibility. Like if you have a mental disorder or you have a handicap, physical handicap or whatever, right, it is not up to the world to kowtow to your ass. It's up to you to figure out how you can get what you need despite your stuff. And you folks have heard me say this before. This becomes an even though, not an if only. right? And for those of you who haven't heard my prior podcast, let me restate what I'm talking about. So a lot of people will come in and they'll say, and I was certainly there as a teenager, no doubt about it. You know, people will say, oh, if I just didn't have this sleep disorder. Oh, if only I didn't have, weren't fat. Oh, if only I didn't have depression. Oh, if I didn't, you know, fill in the blank. If I weren't Greek, if I weren't Jewish, if I weren't American, if I weren't short, if I weren't taller, if I weren't fill in the blank, right? And my response to that is take the if onlys out and change them to even those. Even though I got abducted by aliens and, you know, swished away to Mars for 3 weeks and came back dissociative and whatever, I'm going to try to make the best of my life and get over it the best I can and compensate as most the best I can and not expect sympathy out of everybody. So I like people to take their if-onlys and turn the if-onlys into even those. Right. Even though I've got a sleep disorder, I can figure out a way to get what I need out of the world and to service the people that I treat as patients and guitar students and all this kind of stuff and still make it to the bagel shop on occasion when I need bagels at 3 o'clock. And I really like to get there, you know, between 2:30 and 3 because they give a huge discount for people because they toss the bagels. They're uber responsible. They don't want bad, nasty day old bagels. They toss them. So woohoo to them. And, because most of you know I'm a cheapskate, you know, this works great for me. I show up about 2:45, I get what's left, and I'm on my way. And so one of the ways that I compensate for that is I buy a boatload of bagels there when I'm there. I chop them up, you know, cut them in half, do my thing, put them in bags, wrap them very tightly in foil and Ziploc bags and stuff, put them in the freezer and save them and, you know, defrost them as I need them. So I don't have to get up a whole lot to go to get bagels. I get them in advance. You know, I usually call before I go, what have you got left? And they'll tell me we have this, this, this. And I'll go, okay, thanks. And I'll get in my car and go, you know, and you just do the best you can. And that's really all that any of us can do, whether it's a vision issue, a hearing issue, a race issue, a sex change issue, it doesn't matter. It's all the same daggum principle. It is not up to the world to accommodate you. It is up to you to figure out how you can get what you want and or feel like you need out of the world to the best of your ability without selling yourself short and without being a pain in the butt to everybody else. Okay? That's really kind of where, for me, the cutting edge, because I think everybody on the planet has a right to be an individual, however he or she or whatever sees that individual. However they see, whatever a person sees for themselves, they ought to be. Whatever they feel is appropriate, let them be the best they can be at whatever they feel like they ought to be. But they can't get in the way of somebody else being who they want to be either. Right, so the caveat to that is be the best at whatever it is you want to be that you can possibly be and do it on your own terms as much as you can, but don't get in somebody else's ways of doing the same thing. So, you know, if your goal is to be the best mass murderer, serial killer, or serial rapist on the planet, that's probably going to run into contrary to my little caveat there, because obviously for you to be a good, you know, serial rapist or child molester or mass murderer or whatever, that's kind of going to get into other people's, you know, self-actualization space. That's bad, okay? Bad idea. So always keep in mind what you do has to be on your own terms, but it has to also be respectful of other people's stuff. That doesn't mean you have to sell out, but sometimes you have to modify, you know? And my example of telling people, quote unquote, the truth as I see it is one way that I modify. I don't not tell them the truth, but I make sure they want to hear it before I just blurt it out of my mouth most of the time, unless I'm half asleep. You know, and I say it with the same kind of honesty and yet mutual respect for the person that's hearing the message that I would want them to give me, right? And that's my little cutting edge, you know, the do unto others kind of thing. You know, that's kind of a really good idea, right? Whether you're a Bible person or not, that's just there's some really good caveats that you can find, whether it's in Beavis and Butthead reruns, whether it's in the Bible or the Quran, it doesn't matter, right? Great Expectations, you know, Marvel comic books, I don't care. There are certain things that are just, I consider to be quote-unquote truths with a capital T, and the do unto others is definitely one of those, right? And if you're unsure, ask them. Now, of course, you have to rely on them to be honest with you, which some people will and some people won't, but you can't go second-guessing yourself in this kind of stuff. You'll drive yourself nuts, right? So what I would say is figure out what you want out of the world. What do you want out of other people? What kinds of reactions do you want? What kind of behaviors do you want other people? How do you want other people to treat you? How do you want other people to see you? All you can do is create the person that you want them to see. Make it as clear to your own values as possible. And again, this you know, subsumes that you've done a lot of self-introspection, which I think most people have not. So get off your bicycles and let's get going here. And this is really, really important. And decide, you know, if you can be that thing you want to be and still make, you know, enough of connection with other people in the world, in a society, in a group that you possibly can. And if it's not working, go look and see what you're doing that's not working for you. If you need feedback, that's what you got friends for, not these acquaintances who will lie to your ass, but real friends who will tell you the real stuff as they see it, right? And figure out ways you can work around your own stuff, right? That's the only way you're going to grow. You can't expect other people to kowtow to your stuff. You just can't. You're going to be very frustrated, pissed off, and bitter, right? And you're not going to get what you want, which is even worse, unless your underlying goal is to be frustrated, pissed off, and bitter. And some people have that as a goal. I mean, I've talked about that before in a podcast way back when. But, you know, there are people who just, their goal is to be argumentative and be a pain in the patooties to everybody else and to be a victim. You know, these people are they're either professional victims or professional martyrs or professional irritators, and they get off on that. You know, you know people who like arguments, they get off on conflict. There's people who are like that. I'm not one of them, believe it or not, but there are people who are like that. But if I have to get into a conflict to stand up for myself, I'm going to do it. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, is what you're asking of the other person rational? Would you be willing to do what you're asking the other person to do for you? And be honest with yourself. Don't bullshit yourself. All right? And if you decide that what you want to be is just, you know, out of everybody's ability or willingness to adapt, because no matter what you do, sometimes people are not going to accept you, no matter what the heck you do, right? And I would actually argue that if you tell the truth a lot, people are not going to like you. You're not going to be the world's most popular guy or gal or whatever if you start telling the truth, because most people don't want to hear the truth, in my personal opinion. They want you to lie to them. They want you to make, you know, the Mary Poppins version, a spoonful of sugar, right? And they really don't want much medicine. They want mostly sugar, right? They don't want the real deal. But, you know, whatever. If you decide that it's just too much of an effort for you, you don't want to do it, or, you know, your goals are not to, don't really need a lot of other people to make your life, whatever, you're successful, you know, you can always go to the Adirondacks, you know, or go out to the, you know, Mojave Desert, or, you know, go out to the outback of Australia or wherever and live like a hermit in nature, right? And be whoever and whatever the heck you want to be in nature, as long as you abide by nature's rules. But most of you have heard me say this before, there is no place that doesn't have rules. I know that's a double negative and harder to understand, but let me say it a different way. You can't go any place where rules don't exist. No place. Period. End of story. Right? Because if you go out to the Adirondacks, or you go out to the Rockies and live in the desert or live in the mountains or whatever, right? Nature has rules, right? You don't get shelter. You don't get food, you don't get water, you can't sleep, you can't defecate or urinate, you don't get the right kind of food, you die. Right? Those are rules. Those are limits. Those are boundaries. Right? The same thing, mean the same thing. Just like the bagel shop that closes at 3 o'clock. It's not personal, it's just a boundary, it's a rule. The owner's tired. Right? The owner wants to close at 3 o'clock and go home. I don't blame the owner. Right? If I got up and had to be there at 6, you know, open the doors at 6, which means, for those of you who don't know anything about baking or cooking, that means the owner's probably there at like 3 or 4 in the morning doing bacon, right? They didn't just show up at 5 minutes to 6 and open the doors and go, okay, people, we're open. Come get our bagels. You know, they got to get there and make the bagels, which means they got up at like 3 in the morning and had to be there at like 4 baking the stuff. I mean, it's a lot of freaking work, right? So you got to ask yourself, you know, this isn't personal. It's a boundary, right? Nature has boundaries. The bagel shop has boundaries. I have boundaries. You have boundaries, right? Stores have boundaries. Society has boundaries, right? Religions try to put boundaries on people. And some of them are, in my own opinion, rational, and some of them are not very rational. But that's just my opinion. Everybody is welcome to have his or her own view about that. But my point being, you can't expect other people to kowtow to your stuff. But you got to know what your stuff is. You got to face it squarely. And you got to say, look, I'm not willing to deal with this crap. I'm just going to go isolate myself. I don't care if I don't have anybody. I don't care if I have any friends or relationships or whatever. I'm just going to be who I am, and I'm going to do it. And if people don't like it, the heck with them, right? And you certainly have the right to do that. But don't cry wolf and don't go poor pity party me when people reject you. You know, most of us choose who we are. Now, you don't choose to have a learning disorder. You don't choose to have attention deficits. But you know what? You choose to. You can choose how you're going to accommodate them or get around them. That you do have a responsibility. Some people don't choose to have schizophrenia. It just runs in their family, and they were the unfortunate person that had the genes for it, and they manifested it. But you can choose to manage it. You can choose to manage depression. You can choose to manage overweightness. Right? You can choose to manage a lot of stuff. Some of that takes a lot of creativity, and all of this takes that nasty four-letter word. Oh my God, I know you thought you were going to hear a podcast without the nasty, obscene four-letter word work, right? But you're not. It takes a lot of freaking work. It takes work to look at yourself. It takes work to analyze yourself. It takes work to sit down and figure out how you're going to mesh with whomever it is you want to mesh with and how you're going to avoid whoever it is you don't want to deal with, whether it's groups of people, whether it's society, whatever. I mean, people always have choices. Choices, and you guys and gals have heard me say this before, you don't always have appetitive choices. They're not always great. They're not always what you want, but you always have choices, right? If you're out in the desert starving, you know, you have a choice. You can eat worms, you know, or caterpillars or whatever, or you can die. Not a great choice, you know, but people have choices. You know, if somebody's holding you up with a gun and said, you know, give me all your money or I'm going to shoot you, you have choices. They're not great, but they're choices. Take your power. You guys have heard, and gals have heard me say this before, take your flipping power back. Acknowledge that you have power. You are not freaking helpless. But don't use your power to manipulate other people. Don't use your power to fuss at other people because they don't see how great and wonderful you are, and they don't approve of the dress you're wearing or the new tie you have with the suit or the fact that you were a guy for 3 years and now you're a woman, or you had short hair for 5 or 10 years and now you have hair down to your butt, or now you were playing R&B and now you're playing heavy metal. You know, it doesn't matter. You got to be happy with you. But you can't be happy by expecting the world to kowtow to your stuff. If you want to be an individual, that takes integrity, that takes work, that takes a lot of frustration management, because a lot of people in the world are not going to approve of you. Which, go back to my earlier statement, is you got to decide who and what you are and how important certain values are to you. And if one of your values is, I'm going to be me regardless, then you, if you show up and you flaunt the you choose the consequences. I'm not saying it's fair, right, just, unjust. I'm saying it's reality, right? I'm not giving society an out here, you know. But remember that groups and society, and groups are just small versions of society, which is a big group, right? All these little subgroups that we belong to, right? And most of us belong to a bunch of subgroups, right? They all have both, you know, implicit rules and explicit rules. They have expectations that are voiced and sometimes put in print, right? And sometimes they're subtle, but you know you're not supposed to be doing it, right? Or you're supposed to be doing it. You know, they have rules in both directions. And you have to decide how much of that you're going to buy and how much of that you're not going to buy, right? That's a choice. Whatever you do, there's nothing perfect. Every choice has a potential good consequence and a potential unwanted consequence. And you got to weigh the pros and cons of that, right? But I would say find where you fit, whatever that is, and be the best at that as long as you're not stepping on somebody else's space to do that. Be the best you can be and do it unashamedly. Don't expect the world to pat you on the back for it. Don't expect them to approve of it, but do it bravely. Do it with honor. Do it with dignity. And do it with honesty, whatever that is. Because if you're not, you're not going to be happy with yourself. And let's face it, folks, if we're not happy with ourselves, you sure as heck aren't going to find happiness in something else, even though I know a lot of people do. That's part of the reason we have all these sugar freaks out there. That's part of the reason we have all these foodaholics and sexaholics and drug addicts and possession addicts and all this kind of stuff. They're trying to find happiness outside. And you folks have heard me say this time and time and time and time and time. And did I mention time and time again that happiness is found within? It's not found without. Money's a great thing, and I love it, and God bless you if you have it. And, you know, and it can buy you nice stuff, but real happiness comes from within. And you have to be satisfied and happy with who you are. And if you sell out your stuff for small desires, as Rush might say, you're not going to get it, right? You got to be happy with who you are, but you got to know who you are. You got to be who you are unashamedly, but you don't got to rub it in people's face. And you don't have to expect everybody to like it or accept it. If they don't accept it, sucks to be them. But again, don't expect to get kudos for being an individual. Society is not made up to support individuals. Most groups are not set up to support individuals. The groups, because they're held together with certain laws of similarity, if you will, that they expect their people to abide by. Religions are the same way. Clubs are the same way. Society's no different, right? Again, I'm not saying it's great, it's wonderful, it's sweet. Wouldn't it be great if we could all be different and hang out? Yeah, absolutely. But this is not, Shambhala. And this is not heaven. And I'm not saying we shouldn't give up on those trying to have heaven on earth, so to speak. But we also have to be realistic that people are people, and some folks are going to get it and some folks aren't. That won't stop you from being what you are. Find out who you are. Be the best at what you are, regardless of what anybody says. If you need support, find people who really care about you and who really love you and who really know you, irrespective of your quirks, and get them to give me an opinion. But in the final analysis, you got to make the decision based on the reality of the situation of what you think is going to yield you the best result. It's a pros versus cons, balance sheet, kind of like my CPA when he does my taxes. So that's kind of my shtick. So live well, know yourself, be who you are, find a group of people, hopefully, that support who you are, who will probably like you, but in unique ways, and form a commune, do whatever, but hang out, get support. And if you don't, get support within yourself, connect with something spiritual, get something that gives you jollies inside that isn't harmful for you and that doesn't harm somebody else, because that's the trick, right? Thanks for listening. I hope everybody has an awesome life, and I'll be back again. Thanks.